Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We didn't talk about going to play for the national championship. We talked about we have to prepare to beat Clemson one game at a time, just like we've done. We have trusted the process. Today is Focus Friday. The guys are getting excited. They are getting antsy. I can feel it. I'm getting antsy too. But I think that we have to continue to work up through game time. They're going to make plays. We're going to make plays. We have to work for 60 minutes and focus on winning the game and not worry about all the other stuff. Block out the noise just like we did all year.
The national championship game will be played tonight. Two 14-0 teams, the Tigers, both playing in Death Valley. Pretty cool matchup between LSU, number one in the nation in offense in both points, 48.9, and yards per game, 564. Meanwhile, juxtapose that with Clemson, number one defensively in scoring allowed, 10.6, yards allowed, 244.7. The best offense, the best defense, and a couple of teams looking for 15-0. It's going to be a blast. Chip Patterson joins us right now to break the game down on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Chip, a pleasure, as always, to chat with you, our guest, via CBS Sports, a college football expert. I know people love Alabama, and maybe this isn't the game they wanted all year long, but this is certainly the game we deserve. Is this as good a championship matchup as we've had in the playoff field here over the last 6 years?
In terms of matchup, I'm not going to automatically say that it is much farther than last year, Alabama-Clemson. Now, we might think about that game differently because Trevor Lawrence and the Tigers won that game 44-16 and pretty much held the upper hand throughout, but that game was two 14-0 teams. In fact, it is very uncommon in the college football playoff and really even in the BCS era for us to get teams that have won that are undefeated to this point. And so, yeah, it is absolutely top-filling. And the different angles to this, especially from the statistical side where you mentioned the offense and the defense, but how about also what this says about college football? Because both Ed Orgeron and Dabo Swinney did not come up through what has for a long time been considered the pecking order, the way you work your way up the ladder, because, you know, both of these coaches were position coaches at the time that a head coach was fired. Dabo Swinney, a wide receiver coach, when Tommy Bowden was fired, he was promoted to interim. Ed Orgeron, defensive line coach, he was promoted to interim. You know, they are an example of really what the modern college football coach needs to do. And it's not about being some whiz kid, X's and O's on the offensive or defensive side. It's really about understanding how to empower your staff, how to delegate things, and how to really get your team in the right mindset. And, you know, as we go into this matchup, I think that's really one big advantage for Clemson, because there's not a single coaching staff in the entire country that is more prepared for the 15-game schedule than the Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. They've got it from the consistency standpoint in that they've been there, but they've also got it from the consistency standpoint in that this coaching staff has stayed together. Jeff Scott, one of the co-offensive coordinators, is going to be the new head coach at South Florida next year. That's really the first exit from this staff. And I think that, you know, as they have sort of understood the when they need to hit the gas, when they can let off a little bit. I mean, I was in Chapel Hill for that game against North Carolina where it looked like the Tar Heels, I mean, they could have disrupted all of this. If Sam Howell is able to convert that 2-point conversion on the option, then we might not even see Clemson in this spot. And there was so much panic on the outside. They dropped from number one in the country. Everyone's saying, what's wrong with Trevor Lawrence? But then talking to Clemson's players and Clemson staff, there was no panic at all. And it's because they know that championships aren't won in September. For LSU, it has been incredible the way that Coach O has kept this team going all year long, because they were playing national championship quality ball in September and October and November and December. And if LSU wins this game, I think that Joe Burrow has put together one of the greatest individual seasons in college football history, and I think that LSU is going to go down as one of those, the 2019 LSU Tigers are going to go down as one of those all-time great teams.
Chip, where will this game be decided? I mean, the numbers are video game with the difficulty turned down. It's unbelievable for both sides. Clemson's defense haven't faced anybody like this, obviously. LSU's offensive numbers are just patently absurd. What's the key matchup in your eyes that you'll have circled?
Red zone. And I'm not trying to just lean on something. It is going to be so important. First, when LSU's on offense and Clemson's on defense, I think LSU's going to get their yards. I mean, I think that it is so difficult the way that they spread you out, and they've got all these one-on-one matchups that they're going to win almost every single time. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall, Thaddeus Moss. He got Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a very gifted pass catcher out of the backfield. And Joe Burrow's better than anybody else in the country at looking at what you're doing defensively and figuring out ways to adjust. So, you know, LSU's going to get their yards, but can Clemson force them to kick field goals? Can Clemson maybe push them back a little bit? And then on the other side, I think that Clemson, when they do get into red zone territory, they cannot settle for field goals because LSU is going to score. Like, I think that LSU is guaranteed to score 30, but if Clemson can hold them under 40, then I think they can win this game. But the only way they're going to do that is if they're able to force them to settle for 3 instead of getting 7 every single time.
Chip Patterson is with us, CBS Sports, previewing tonight's LSU-Clemson national final game. What a quarterback matchup we've got. Trevor Lawrence, 36 touchdowns, 8 picks this year, and a 173 rating, is going to be the number one pick in next year's draft. Joe Burrow just won the Heisman after 55 touchdowns this season with just 6 interceptions. He's going to be the number one pick in this year's draft. Who do you like better in this situation tonight? And then if you wouldn't mind, who would you rather bet on to have a better NFL career as the two next number one overall quarterbacks?
Burrow tonight, just because he's the hot hand. I mean, I can't shake everything that I've seen. I've seen LSU in person a couple times this year, but that when it really stood out to me was down in Austin against Texas. And after that game, you know, the way that Burrow handles himself, the way that he carries himself, he's just, I mean, his mom was a college basketball player at Mississippi State, once scored 82 points in a game. Wow. His dad, you know, college football player, college football coach. He's a second generation athlete. I mean, he knows everything. He understands the rhythms of it. You know, he's been at Ohio State and competed against some of the best players in the country. He's been at LSU. He's won these games in the SEC West. He's so good in crunch time situations because he's unflappable. Like right now, I'm taking Joe Burrow tonight. But to your second question, I think Trevor Lawrence, and that's because I think that we've seen Joe Burrow get to this point, and Trevor Lawrence still has a lot of development to do. Now, that being said, some of that happened in season because those 8 interceptions all happened in the first part of the season. You know, that was when we were saying, what's wrong with Trevor Lawrence? What's wrong with Trevor Lawrence? And it's because Trevor Lawrence was trying really hard to live up to what you said, being the number one pick in the 2021 NFL draft. He was taking too many chances. He was trying to force balls so they shouldn't have been forced. But when he settled down and when he leaned back into the format of the Clemson offense, kind of like he did the year before as a freshman, then all of a sudden everything became easier. And no interceptions since the Louisville game. 8 interceptions. He was once leading the ACC in interceptions. But since the Louisville game, 0 interceptions. Now the touchdowns have continued to pile up. And I would also point back to that Ohio State game. What he's able to do as a runner is incredibly difficult for opposing defenses to stop. So I'm going to say Burrow tonight. But if we're talking about sort of the long-range NFL-type future, I think I'll go Lawrence.
Chip, as you probably know, here in D.C., there are plenty of college football fans who, you know, went to different schools in the area. But by and large, just people that want to see a good football game. But when they tune in, the Redskins have the number 2 pick. They're also looking at this from a draft standpoint. Other than those two guys, who are the biggest stars? Who are some draft names we should know that are first-round talents on the field this evening?
T. Higgins, the Clemson wide receiver, is just an absolute monster. He was banged up a little bit in that Ohio State game, but I believe him to be fully healthy and ready to go. Justin Ross, another Clemson wide receiver, is going to be the year after him. So if you're looking for pass-catching talent, Clemson's got a bunch of them. And then on the LSU side, I would also point to the defensive side of the ball. It's going to take a little bit because he's just a freshman, but Derek Stingley Jr. is an absolute stud at the cornerback position. And I'm a big fan of Grant Delpit, the LSU safety. I mean, they call themselves DBU down there in Baton Rouge, and it's because they just turn out pro after pro after pro after pro on the defensive side of the ball. And then let's throw in one more. Let's go Kalavon Chasen, the LSU linebacker. He is one of those just really, really gifted pass rushers that you always have to keep your eye on. And so, I mean, we're not talking about the type of game like Alabama LSU in the 2011-2012 season where every single player from the two deep on both sides ended up going to the NFL. You know, it's not that ridiculous level of talent, but there is certainly is plenty to go around in this game.
At Chip underscore Patterson, our college football analyst from CBS Sports joining us. Really appreciate the time, Chip, man. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, sounds good. Y'all be well.
What a matchup for the national title. 8 o'clock this evening on ESPN, and they're doing the megacast that we love so much.
Oh, yeah, nice.
In fact, I saw this morning. There's going to be 15 different ways to watch this.
15?
We've probably now reached overkill territory, but I still like all the options. You don't have to use all 15.
One camera's from a blade of grass at the 30.
9 of these are going to be over-the-air Disney properties, and then 6 are just on the app added options where you kind of play your own director and can use different cameras and things, I'm sure. But 15 different ways to watch this, including when they have all the coaches sitting around with the film and studying each and every play and talking about play calls, which I know you and I have got a lot of in the past. We really enjoyed that. Next on Grant and Danny, biggest winners from the playoff weekend that was in the NFL. We'll get to biggest losers as well on G&D right here on The Fan. I would tell you to watch tonight if you're a Redskins fan for some possible draft prospects, except that unless they trade back, they're taking Chase Young.
Right, I was going to say, he ain't playing tonight.
Now, I will say if they trade back, then there are a bunch of guys in this game that they could take.
Oh, so many.
Like, I could see them taking Grant Delpit, the defensive back, the safety from LSU in the late first round if they ended up getting a couple picks from Miami or something like that. But it's going to be good football regardless, and there's certainly a potential future Redskin playing in the game today. As we welcome you back, GND on 106.7 The Fan. We did this last week. We liked it after the Saturday and Sunday playoff tilt, so we'll do it again. Biggest winners from the 4 NFL games we had this weekend with San Francisco, Tennessee, Kansas City, and Green Bay advancing to the conference final. Why don't you get us started with your number one winner of the weekend?
Mike Vrabel, man. I said this at the top of the show. I'm saying it now. I know that he had a lot of players perform at a really high level, specifically Derrick Henry, which I'm sure we'll get to. We need to put Vrabel in a different category. That guy's really good. He's got the Belichick thing. I'm not saying he's Bill Belichick, by the way, okay? But he's got the Belichick thing where
he says— You think he's Bill Belichick?
Yeah, they're the same, said Danny in 1120. No. He's got that thing where he goes, I know you. I know what you want to do. I know what you're best at. We're taking that away. You ain't doing that one thing. You beat us with something else, tip of the cap. He takes it away, and he's able to exert his will. Smart game planning, aggressive. His team's playing better as the season goes along. Mark of a really good coach to me. Mike Vrabel needs to be moved into that excellent head coach category. Big win for him.
Derrick Henry, biggest winner of the weekend. 195 following up 182. The guy's a robot. I mean, he is a machine sent to this planet to just run people over. You know, we debate and argue and yell so much about play selection and running and passing and first down and when is good to do these things. If you have that guy and this offensive line, nothing really matters. Mm. Call what you want when you want. He's so big and so physical, and they block it up so well, he's getting 3 yards before he gets touched. He's falling forward for 4 or 5 at a time. When he got 5 yards, it looked like he got stopped at the line of scrimmage. It was that kind of game against Baltimore. Nobody's value in this league has skyrocketed more in the last couple of weeks than his. I say all that, and yet I'll still contradict myself a bit and tell you I wouldn't pay him when it became time because that body is not going to be kind with time.
Big physical running backs like that, man. The
list
is long.
This is a use-by date, like milk, man. You got to get it. You got to put it in your fridge. You got to get rid of it as quick as possible. But ride him into the ground if it gets you a Super Bowl ring this year. He'll be okay with it. He wants to go win a title. 30 for almost 200. He was my biggest winner. Next, I'm going to go with Pat Mahomes.
That's mine, yeah.
Mahomes' game was nearly perfect. He was not the reason why Kansas City went down 24-0. In fact, he was a victim. Just drop pass after drop pass with a punt block, with a muffed punt. You name things that could have gone wrong for the Chiefs, they did. He had just made some accurate passes and had done nothing wrong and was down 24-0. And you watched his body language on the sideline. Looked like they hadn't kicked off yet. He was happy and high-fiving teammates and trying to pump guys up. And he was basically saying, I got you. When they scored that first touchdown, it was 24-7. He ran 60 yards downfield screaming, trying to get the crowd into the game. That was his entire goal, basically, being over the top with his celebrations. Let me get Arrowhead back into this thing. Eventually, he threw for 321 and 5 in a win for the Chiefs as they came back from down 24.
I don't know that anybody else in the league right now could have done what he did in that environment. Guys in the past could have. I don't know if anybody else right now this minute could have done that. I'll give you a winner, Devontae Adams. That's a bad mother bleep right there. That guy's better than your guy. You got someone that can cover him this play? That's fine. We'll put him in the slot. How about a huge, big Huevos Rancheros moment? A got-to-have-it third down and long. Just drop one in the bucket. He beats the guy at the line of scrimmage. Makes a great route, great catch, great toe tap, great everything. He is awesome. When he's healthy, that's one of the best players in the NFL, one of the best receivers. And nobody, you never consider him first, right? It's always Beckham with a headline or Julio Jones or some of these other guys that are great. Devontae Adams, great.
Kyle Shanahan's a big winner this weekend.
Sure is.
As he is on to a conference championship game. People don't get how hard it was for him to get a job after he was blown out by the Redskins. His dad was calling around on his behalf, begging people to hire Kyle Shanahan before he got a job with Cleveland. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Begging people to take Kyle on, saying, hey, don't believe what you're hearing from the Redskins. This guy is good. Look at his numbers in Houston. Look what we did in Washington. It wasn't all about me. He was involved in that. I mean, he almost was out of football for a year. Just had to take one of the worst jobs at the time there was. A Browns OC job with a terrible quarterback situation.
He had to go be on underwater fire prevention for a year, you know?
And now he's on to the Super Bowl. There's no one I've kind of studied more. There's no one who's taught me more about offense, both kind of in person, talking to them, but also watching his offense than him. This is what I would want to do if I was able to coordinate an offense. He's just really, really smart. He plays to his team's strengths. He's got an unbelievable running game, as he always has. In Houston, mm-hmm. he was number one in rushing offense with Arian Foster, but he's from his dad's school and that Gary Kubiak, Alex Gibbs zone running scheme. He throws to set it up beautifully. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo right now is, I got to be honest, I haven't been impressed by Jimmy Garoppolo really much at all this season. He was 11 of 19 for 131 with a touch and a bad pick this weekend. He's a winner, though. You know, he moves on, and everyone will talk about he is now 1-0 in the playoffs. This was Tevin Coleman, Raheem Mostert, and this was this pass rush. Robert Saleh, who's interviewing for jobs this offseason, that defense is great, but Shanahan's built a good culture there. They were terrible as recently as a year ago. They win by 17, and they're going to be heavy favorites in the NFC Championship game to get to a Super Bowl.
My winner, it's a small one here. I thought this was just so cool. My wife didn't know about this guy, and we're watching that late game, the Seahawks-Packers game. Ends up in a loss. Shaquem Griffin. His first career sack.
That was awesome.
That was really, really cool. He gets Aaron Rodgers in a playoff game to basically give the ball back to Russell Wilson for a chance to win it. If you don't know the story, he does not have a left hand. I have a left hand. Dar has a left hand. A lot of people do. He doesn't. He's playing on Sundays. Second year. Played all 16 games this year for Seattle for the second straight season. His first career sack late in the fourth quarter to give Seattle a chance to have the ball back. And the celebration was justified and awesome, and it was really, really neat to see. And I gave her the story, and she was like, that's pretty cool. We should stop complaining about stuff.
Dean Pease, defensive coordinator of the Titans. Before that, he was the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. This is a guy who no one ever talks about.
No one talks about him.
I think he's really, really good defensive coordinator.
Mm.
That or he's just the luckiest guy who's ever lived. Everywhere he goes, defenses are great, and playoff games are won on his defense's back. For him to have gotten a huge win and designed that plan and be able to, they didn't shut down Lamar Jackson, but they certainly, he was floundering. I mean, they flustered him early in that game. He put up a lot of numbers in the second half throwing the football. But Dean Pease, one of the better DCs in this league, and no one ever talks about the guy, one of my winners. Let's get to our losers of the weekend next. If you've got any thoughts, we could take your calls. I haven't really opened up the phones today. 800-636-1067 is the number. Who are your winners? Who are your losers from the divisional playoff round in the NFL? 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. From the winners of divisional round football to the losers, welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106-7, the fan. The conference championship games are set. The 49ers will play the Packers. You're 1-2 seed in the NFC. Two best teams all year, two 13-3 clubs. The only team I would have made a case for is New Orleans, who the Vikings shocked in the Superdome last week. I think New Orleans probably a little bit better than Green Bay this season for me. They didn't get the bye week, and so their season ended when it did. But San Francisco-Green Bay is going to be a great matchup. And then in the AFC, I would say more than the best teams, you got the hottest teams. The Chiefs and the Titans, the teams that have kind of been rolling down the stretch, the best versions of themselves over the last few weeks.
Basically, I think you go back to, what is it now? Like week 19, 20, whenever you start to add all the different weeks together. 5-5 for Tennessee, 6-4 for Kansas City. Very different since then, right? They've been ripping off win after win after win. You know, for Tennessee's case, they've been playing must-win kind of games. This is their best football of the year, and it's all happening right now. Went on the road, beat New England. Went on the road and beat what everybody thought was the prohibitive Super Bowl favorite. The way that they're playing defense sets up what they want to do on offense, and it's working.
Here's a crazy stat I saw this morning. Derrick Henry has more rushing yards after contact in these playoffs than Ryan Tannehill has passing yards. I'm going to say that again. After contact, Henry has run for more yards in these playoffs, 233, than Tannehill has thrown for 160 in a pair of wins for the Titans as they shocked top-seeded Baltimore. In that game, they were outgained by 230 yards. A little bit misleading because the Ravens were down big and gained a lot of yards late. But I'll bet you can count on one hand the number of times a team in the playoffs has ever been outgained by 230 and won. Henry becoming the first player in NFL history with at least 180 rushing yards in three straight games. And he threw a touchdown pass, which we didn't talk about. That Arthur Smith call on the goal line.
A jump pass business.
49ers, 27-10 over the Vikings. Nick Bosa had two sacks. Richard Sherman a pick. San Francisco's defense held Minnesota to 147 yards, 21 rushing, and just 7 first downs, the third fewest ever recorded in a playoff game. They shut the Vikings down. Luckily for the Minnesota, Kirk Cousins to Stephon Diggs early to make it 7-7, a big 40-yard touchdown pass, or else who knows if they get on the board again after that. We talked about the Chiefs, 20-point win over the Texans after being down 24-0. Kansas City coming out of that hole, biggest deficit the franchise had ever overcome. Mahomes, 5 touchdown passes, one of the great comebacks ever. Kansas City becoming the first team in league history to win a playoff game by 20 points after trailing by 20 points. And really, it was all about Travis Kelce. And then Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. He and Davante Adams putting on a show for the Pack. I thought that was going to be all about Aaron Jones. It was the other Aaron, though. It was Rodgers, who has not really had his big season, who was huge. Let's talk about losers, though. We just got to the winners. Your losers from this weekend in the divisional round.
Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer. I like Mike Zimmer generally. I think he's the perfectly suited defensive coordinator. Maybe one day could be that CEO of a head coach where he actually allows his offensive coordinator.
He's pretty old at this point. Is he going to learn something new?
Maybe by this season. Maybe if he gets another crack at it, maybe he could figure it out that I need to not go down to that wing of the building.
I
need to not talk to my offensive guy, but I'm probably with you. I think this is what it is. You open up the first several possessions by handing the ball off to Dalvin Cook for 3 yards or less. It happened 4 straight times. You lose. That's why you lost. You became one-dimensional, and once that happened, it was over, Johnny. You hit a ceiling with a guy like this. He's a great program changer. He's a great guy to instill a culture of toughness and work ethic and everything else. But, man, oh, man, you just lower your team's ceiling. When you have 2 of the 10 best receivers, maybe in all the NFL, a guy you paid damn near $90 million to throw it to them, and you won't do it.
So here's, though, I think the other part of that is he could be a good head coach. Like Ron Rivera is a good head coach who's defensive-minded. If he just stayed out of the offensive side, know what you do when you don't do well. And get out of someone's business. You know, he fired one coordinator last year. Kevin Stefanski just got a head coaching job and is a darling analytically. And yet, he's pulling the Kevin O'Connell where he's butting heads with the dinosaur all the time. Last year with O'Connell, it was Bill Callahan. Those guys behind the scenes going at it over design and scheme and play calling and play selection. And that's what all the OCs do with Mike Zimmer. Because his point is, you score 17 and no more than that, and we're going to win. I don't want you to do anything negative. Don't do a whole lot positive either. Just let my defense win this game. And in the meantime, run first, run second, 3rd and 7.
Mm.
So it's basically the way of the world. My loser of the weekend, you know, I hate to say Lamar Jackson. I don't want to make it a player, but I'll say the Ravens offense.
Mm.
We heard all year how great this thing was, and it was indeed amazing. But this has kind of been my trepidation. This is where I just don't completely buy in. You are so one-dimensional. This was the greatest rushing offense we'd ever seen. But this is not going to change, in my opinion. You saw it with the Chargers in the playoffs last year. You now saw it this year. I'm not going to play the you can't win a Super Bowl this way game. There's a lot of hot takers now telling you Lamar Jackson can never win a Super Bowl. The guy's freaking 23 years old and has already been in the playoffs twice. I'm not playing that game either. What I will tell you is, if you don't become more multifaceted as a pocket passing team, and you don't get to a point where you are less read option and quarterback run dominant, it's going to be really, really difficult. It becomes exceptionally demanding of the game script. You have to have things go your way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always in the league. At times, you're going to have to do what the Chiefs did. You're going to have to come back from down 14-0. Someone's going to drop a pass. Someone's going to lose a fumble. Someone's going to muff a kickoff at some point. And eventually, you're going to be behind in games. If you can throw from the pocket in this league, you can win. If you can't, then you're not going to be able to. Now, maybe the Titans, because they've got this Derrick Henry thing going at a level I've never seen.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it'll never catch up to them. My guess is they got to win two more games and eventually it will. But we'll see. No one's saying it's impossible to do it. There are still really cold days. That doesn't mean that the climate's not changing. It's just hard to do it this way. And they're going to learn that more often than they don't in the playoffs, I think, as they play really good teams and play from behind occasionally.
Another loser for me is Bill O'Brien. I don't pin the entire loss on him. I think a lot of people in Houston are doing that. To me, though, this is you coach to the game. You coach to who you're playing, right? It's very easy to say this is who we are and this is kind of how we do things and just sort of be able to clam up. But I'm looking at Kansas City. I'm looking at the Kansas City Chiefs. If I was looking across the field at the Titans or a bunch of other offenses, I'd go, yeah, kick my field goal. He made a losery, safe, conservative decision because he didn't trust his MVP. He didn't trust his superstar to get a play done for him on a fourth down when he had control of the game. Keep control of the game. Don't you ever let up in the postseason. There are always stories of the 35-3 Oilers lead over the Buffalo Bills. Everybody's got a comeback story. Well, the other end of that is, did you do anything to aid that? And Bill O'Brien did that. Frustrating to me, especially if I'm a Houston Texans fan. They had that game gifted to them, 24-0, where they probably didn't deserve 24 points to start the game. They got spotted that and ended up losing by 20 points. That's a shame.
Pete Carroll, loser this weekend. Mm. Here's why. I'm going to assume it was his idea. Could have been someone else's, and that person should take his place on my list to bring in Marshawn Lynch. Never made any sense to me. What has he been doing? Do we really think that guy was training for an NFL postseason run?
Diligently working out?
There's no chance. He was extremely retired with no consideration of coming back. And you said, we'll just go get him. Why? Because our fans will be excited because he rumbled against the Saints for that beast quake one time because he was mediocre for the Raiders a year ago. I don't really know what your thinking was.
10 years ago?
Close to it. We'll just hand it to him on first, second, and third down, and then punt at one point in the first half. And then Schottenheimer could be on my list as well.
He's mine, yeah.
I would love to sit down and say, hey, explain to me why you didn't bring in an NFL running back, a guy that was in the NFL this year. Why you didn't bring in someone who's on the workout circuit, who's still in game shape. We talk all the time about how coaches just hire their own. It's a problem to some extent in the league now. It's what happens, but I think it's a reason why there aren't as many black coaches as there should be. It's kind of a good old boys. You hire the people you work with. You hire the people you know. So when there are more white owners and white GMs and white head coaches, like those guys get a lot of the opportunities. We've talked about this cyclical issue, right? It's the same with when coaches get hired, like Ron Rivera. We're going, is it okay he's bringing all these Panthers people? Well, yeah, it's okay. What would you do if you got a radio show that you're starting a podcast tomorrow? Who are you calling? Probably Tom and Brendan and me, people you know, people you worked with from the fan. That's how this works. That's how the world works. I need scouting departments and pro personnel people that have lists of available running backs to present that to someone when they say, we need a running back. Call that guy that was here the last time we won a Super Bowl. It was so dumb to me. And then he ran 30 times for 60 yards. Good. I wanted that to happen. I wanted you to look like fools because it was a foolish thing to do.
Added one more loser. You touched on his name, Brian Schottenheimer. I just want to walk into the building and say, Russ, come with me. Let's go to Brian Schottenheimer's office. Brian, this is Russell Wilson. He's a superstar. He's the best player you have. Russell. Involve him in this game plan. And do it early instead of late. Okay, man? You'll have much better fortune. I'll see you later. My work here is done. I'll take my consulting fee of nothing because it's so obvious. What is everyone doing in Seattle? I can't believe they keep endorsing this guy. He's run them into the ground for two straight years, talking about old Shoddy. If his name was Brian Stevenson, he would be sitting here next to us because he's an idiot. What are you doing? Stop employing this man.
He would be sitting here with us. There's a really good chance. The double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Back half the show, which quarterback would you rather have for their NFL careers if you had to guess right now who's going to be better, Joe Burrow or Trevor Lawrence? We'll take your calls on that ahead of tonight's national championship game. We're Grant and Danny, and you're locked into the Fan. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
A couple of years ago, when women all across the country, and a few dudes too, I guess, who either wanted to hang out with the women or actually interested in themselves, God bless you, woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and watched 30 hours of coverage of Harry and Meghan get married in London for this grandiose ceremony. And everybody spoke for 2 hours about how she walked down the line and then, you know, 7 hours about the dress and whatever else. You're crazy. You're wrong. And it was dumb. And you said stupid things like, it's a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale. I didn't care then, and God bless you, you cared, and that's fine. You don't care about the Super Bowl the way that I care, and that's all well and good. Everybody's got their things. Well, I do care about this. These two spoiled, whiny, entitled brats have basically, if you're not following the story, decided that this is too much for them. I can't possibly be expected to live in a house owned by my grandmother separate from everybody else. I can't be expected to live on the stipend from the United Kingdom's government off the backs of taxpayers where I renovated for millions of pounds. Thank you. It's not actually in dollars, it's pounds. Thank you so much. We renovated to our specifications. I can't be bothered to do all the things that come with it, like cutting a ribbon in some downtrodden burg on the outskirts of faraway places on the aisle. I can't bother to do all that. I've got to do my own thing. We're going to divest. We're going to become financially independent. Well, guess what? They're barred from earning their own money at this point. Yeah, they got to live off of trusts and estates from Harry's mother, who passed away, obviously Princess Diana. We all know that story. And, you know, a bunch of $30 million grants and other kind of things that they've built up over their lives. So what huge sacrifices they are making. Martyrs, these two. I cannot stand this. I cannot stand this. On a smaller scale, you have the actors who bother me so much, actors and actresses in the States who can't stand the press, can't stand the media, you can't possibly bother me, and yet, when it comes time to promote my movie, you want to use the press. It's hypocritical, it's a double standard. Either you want people interested in you, or you don't. And if you don't, you can move somewhere else and not be an actor. But you don't get to complain and bitch and kvetch when someone takes a picture of you when you're out in public. This is that times a trillion. Again, I didn't care about the stupid wedding. I don't care about what dumb outfit she wears or has repeated two blue coats over the course of 2 years. I don't care about that. I care about this. I care about the fact that you've been afforded this position that comes with a couple things. I care about the fact that it's a spit in the face. It's a middle finger to everybody that works for a living all around the world.
And you're a guy who's watched The Crown. This could be season 4. This could be your next season.
This will be The Crown one day. I hope they keep this show going. Because, again, I don't care about that, but I care about shows like The Crown. I care about these two spoiled, whiny pukes basically pretending that this whole thing is too much. They launched a website the same day that they decided.
What was the deal with the website? Because this was the thing that threw me off. They launched a website, and that was somehow heavily involved in all of this?
Yeah. So they basically pretended that they just, you know, it's only just come to our minds that we're actually looking in this direction to try to do this, to take a bit of a step back among the senior members of the royal family. Well, all the while, they've been in web development for this thing called Sussex Royal. Here's what they want to do. Be the world's biggest Instagram influencers. Right. That's their goal.
Prince Harry, Duke of Sussex.
They're going to take their private jet somewhere to lecture me about responsible climate behavior.
Why can't they do that, though, and still just be in the family?
Exactly. Because they don't want to do the things that they have to do. The have-to-do things, honestly, are probably not that much fun.
So I know nothing about anything, okay? Mm-hmm. So everything I'm about to say is just, I am a passerby eavesdropping on this entire relationship. I know nothing about mm-hmm. anything. Here is my hot take slash guess. I'll bet Harry, it's Harry, right?
Harry.
The redhead. The other one is named
Meghan.
One that looks like CK.
Oh, William.
William, okay.
I call him CK. Yeah. Prince CK.
Right. So Harry doesn't want anything to do with leaving his family. Meghan does not get size for the family at all. This is my guess. And this has happened with like a million marriages. And she's just like, we're not going to be that involved with your family. And instead of actually, like, standing up and doing what Harry should be doing, he's like, this is easier for me. I'll just do whatever she wants to do. But Meghan married into this. You knew what you were getting into when you had your little princess ball. You knew what you were getting into when you were the talk of every girl in the country, in a lot of countries, actually. You knew what you were getting into when you had your big parade and you wore your outfit. You don't get to change your mind now. Don't get married to the Prince of Sussex or the Duchess or whatever the hell he is.
Yeah.
Is he the Duchess of Sussex?
He's the Duke.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know why I asked.
I'm not mad at you.
And I'm mad at you, okay?
You're mad at me?
Yeah, you brought all this up. You brought this up. No one was ever going to mention it on this show. Then you brought it up. That guy, whoever, yeah, whatever he is, mm-hmm, you married him and you decided you were going to be part of this little dumb, antiquated fairy tale. Mm-hmm. Now you don't get to just not be part of it.
Well, it
you have
was,
to play the game now.
It was such a, it was, they wanted so little of this public life and public eye. Now, I don't want to get in people's family business, okay? Now, family stuff, families are weird. People in my family don't talk to each other over stupid crap that lasts decades, and that happens.
I met Uncle Jim.
That's right. We still do talk to each other despite that incident.
I know Uncle Jim. Now,
beyond that, but Meghan didn't have family sitting up front of her wedding. She had George Clooney. So I'm sure the spotlight's too much for you. I'm sure the spotlight is way, way, way too much. And I'm sure you're best friends with George Clooney.
George Clooney was friends with her?
Yeah, he sat up front. You know where the family sits at a wedding? He was sitting there. The
Wait,
pews that are reserved for family
How does she
know
George
members.
Clooney?
Probably just sort of being around and congratulating herself for being charitable. She's a B-level actress that got herself in the greatest part of a lifetime. Okay?
Was her family not at the wedding?
The majority of her family, as I understand it, was not. And again, I don't begrudge anybody for that kind of stuff. Family dynamics are weird. I don't know the story. I don't know what happened. Who called who what. I just know that this life of the spotlight is way too much to ask for. And yet she had like a celebrity A-list guest sitting in rows that normally would be reserved for family at her wedding. They have eaten all this kind of stuff up. They love the attention. They decided they don't like the negative attention. By the way, some of the negative stuff, way over the top. I will tell you, the cushy lifestyle that you lead, which has no work involved. You put on a suit and you smile for some pictures. You cut a couple ribbons that comes from the gift that you've been given. Sometimes comes with negative attention that's over the top.
I'm stunned you're this emotionally invested.
I care about this so much because this is what they are. They want to be Instagram influencers. In my opinion, it's hardened criminals right below them. The influencer class of people, that's what they want to be.
All right, but boil this down as best you can.
Yes.
Normally, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry are on TV. You're just flipping right past it.
Yes. Because
in a sentence, why do you care so much about this thing? You didn't care about the parties. You didn't care about the wedding. You didn't care about anything. Now you care about this. Why?
The gift that they've been given of the consequence-free life, too hard for them. You know what's too hard? Mortgages, commutes, your kid is sick, and you've got to get a babysitter, and you got to leave work early. What they do is not hard, and they pretend that it was too hard, and they're telling us it's too hard for them. Meanwhile, they still enjoy 96% of the cushy privileges without the actual effort. It's an insult to the entire planet.
You have to go to the Oscars and sit there and watch the whole show.
Okay.
Or you have to go on a double date with Harry and Meghan. Which are you doing?
That's a great question. Would I be allowed to ruin the double date by telling them what I think of them?
No. You have to play nice.
I have to pretend that it's fine?
Talk to them about how tough their life is.
Oscars.
You're going to the Oscars. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is the Fan.
Very
the
passionate.
Beltway Blitz is next on G&D.
Guys, Danny Ruvier here from my pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt man. I got a couple different cars over the years. It speaks to that. I love these guys. New year, new you. New Ford from Ted Britt Ford. Your F-150 HQ in Fairfax and Chantilly. 2019 F-150 from Ted Britt Ford. Get up to $15,000 below the MSRP. Okay? I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. That's not like $1,500 and Danny messed up and you're going to go in and they're like, are you sure this is the amount of money? Oh, that sounds wrong. I don't know why you sound like that, but just keep that in mind. $15,000 below the MSRP and no payments for 60 days. How about a 2019 F240 SD? Drew up to $13,900 off the MSRP plus no payment. How about a 2019 Ford Ranger truck or a Ronair, if you will? $8,000 below MSRP. And for all those cars and trucks I mentioned, no payments for 60 days. Here's the deal. Ted Britt Ford's been in business for 60 years. Here's how they've done that. Great value on cars, trucks, SUVs. Get you great value for your trade-in, and they will treat you incredibly well. I know. I've been a 3-time customer of Ted Britt Ford. Go see him. Fairfax, Chantilly. Click away, Ted Britt Ford. Go. Do this one thing. Tell me. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.